Welcome to Christian Sanity. I'm Dr. Brittany Dahl.
And I'm her sidekick, Kristen.
And together, we explore the weird, wild, and what the F's of all things Christian. I was essentially born in a baptismal. I mean, I was raised heavily churched and was in church ministry for much of my adult life. Now, I'm a licensed clinical marriage and family therapist, and I specialize in religious trauma.
And I came to Jesus as a teen by way of church camp altar call. Spent most of my adult life in church ministry as well, and now I am a grad student with a lot of opinions.
And just a disclaimer, this podcast is for the over-churched, whether you have remained in Christianity or not. It is not, however, for the overly indoctrinated, religiously sensitive. We both love and respect the person of Jesus, but we believe the religion of Christianity gets it wrong more often than it gets it right. There will be cussing in this podcast, and we will be mocking religious dogma and the absurdity of what some Christians do for the love of Jesus. So, if that's not your thing, no hard feelings, just move along to something that fits your life and beliefs. But if you have decided to stay, thanks so much for joining us. Let's get started! Today on our podcast, we have an amazing guest. She's an artist, an author, and a what? A pastor! She has an amazing story and joined us to talk about her soon-to-be-released book, about her journey from Hollywood to clergy, from narcissistic abuse to healing through the support of her congregation. Having experienced some religious trauma, she's fully aware of how the church can be a place of healing, but also a source of great pain.
My name's Pastor Rebecca Craig. I am a pastor in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. And I just wrote a book called Once Upon a Nightmare Through the Looking Glass of Narcissistic Abuse. And that gets released on May 28th. I'm very excited. Yay.
Yay!
my first book, even though I like have a journalism degree and have been writing for I don't know how long, it's the first time I've really attempted getting something published. But before being a pastor, I actually used to work for Disney Animation and story development.
Yes. Your story. Oh, I could not wait until today. It's so amazing.
Well, hit me with your, you know, with your thoughts and questions on that story.
Oh my gosh. First of all, you're an amazing writer. I found it so easy to read. It was so funny. There were so many parts where I just laughed out loud. I was like, it's relatable.
I enjoy hearing that because I don't consider myself a funny, like a comedic writer. So to hear that you found it funny, actually, I'm like, oh, that wasn't what I was expecting, but cool.
There were funny parts, especially the relatable part. There was a part where you're sitting at a bar. I was like, okay, so you're like, you know, I'm an introvert, so I should probably get out and have some social interaction. And your choice was sitting at a bar reading.
I know.
Drinking wine. I was like, that is so me. I laughed so hard.
Where do you go that like I'm actually out in public, but like I don't have to be around a ton of people, you know?
Absolutely. 100%.
Where I can still be alone with other people.
In old Chicago. That was so funny to me. Yeah, great.
And,
so,
you know, I wonder why I'm single. You know, that's
right. Yeah, because that was definitely me when I was trying to date too. I was like, you know, it reminds me of this scene in I think the movie's Hitch with Will Smith, and she's sitting there, you know, glasses, and he's like, "You're obviously sitting here not wanting to be hit on. You know, you got under 3-inch heels. You're sitting here with your glasses on, reading whatever." I'm like, yeah, don't bother me.
I want to go meet people, but like, don't talk to me.
Not really. No, I don't. I just want to sit here and people watch. Right. I don't really want anybody to talk to me. So
that,
great.
That actually sounds delightful.
Of course, my,
I know.
Of course, my favorite part of that, though, is when the guy starts swearing at me.
So the story is this trucker comes up to you, right? He's trying to hit on you, buys you a drink.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah. So the story is that again, I go into this bar because I'm like, I really ought to get out more. I haven't, you know, being a pastor is a very isolating kind of job.
Yeah.
So if you want to meet people outside of like your church, you know, you have to go do other things. So I was like, I'm in this small town in relatively small town in Nebraska. Where, you know, should I go to like meet other kinds of people? So I'm like, I'll go to this bar at Old Chicago with a book, you know, cause I was working on my sermon, for the weekend. And there is a trucker in there who comes up, hits on me, buys me a drink and starts, you know, talking. And I'm just kind of sitting there like, okay. And, which nothing against truckers. I mean, it's a tough profession, man.
Talk about an isolating.
Yeah. Also
job.
An isolating profession, but he comes up and he's had a few. So he's, you know, kind of, you know, off in his own little land and starts, you know,
let's go back to my truck, baby.
Yep. and he starts, you know, he's like, so, you know, what do you do? And I'm like, oh,
yeah,
this will be fun.
This is fun. Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh, I'm a pastor. He's like, holy. And the bartender, she's back there and she's witnessing this whole thing. And she's just like, really?
Yeah, you cussed at her.
Really? She's like, she just told you she's a pastor and your response is to swear out. I died laughing. I was like,
that's amazing. I'm sure you get that often.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, and then he kind of had to, well, I don't swear at me all that much. It's usually
maybe just some like recoil
of
disgust or
usually the response is an immediate explanation of why they haven't gone to church in a long time.
A confession.
Yes. No! Usually it's, you tell somebody you're a pastor and they're like, oh yeah. I haven't been to church in a while. Cause you know, I have X, Y.
Like you can tell by looking at them or something. Right. Like you're looking into their soul.
I don't know why.
You know, she speaks for God. So they're hoping that she's going to relay this information. Can you tell the big man that I've been a little busy, you know, I have my reasons.
And you're just going to look at them and I'm like, okay.
I don't care. Yeah.
I'm like, I'm not the church police.
That's right. Exactly. That's why I usually tell people that I'm an accountant instead of a therapist. Because there's always some response
that's brilliant.
You know,
then they may want to tell you all their issues.
My father's a doctor, and
yeah. Can you take a look at this mole?
Like,
I've got this thing.
I make an appointment.
Exactly. I'm not giving you free therapy. Yes. Oh my gosh. So your story, So are you originally from Nebraska? Is that right? Is that where family
I'm
is?
I'm from Lincoln, yeah.
Okay. But still, small Midwest to head to Hollywood.
Yeah.
So, yeah, tell us a little bit about that.
So my poor mother.
Yeah.
They were not happy about the fact that I decided to pick up and move to California.
A big dangerous town.
Dangerous, scary town. Now, to be fair, I had traveled a lot. My parents, my dad was he was a doctor, but he was also a private pilot. So we went on lots of vacations all over the United States. So I traveled. So it's not like I hadn't ever been to big cities or anything like that. Sure. But had I actually lived in something bigger than Lincoln, Nebraska prior to that? No, I had not. So it was a culture shock, and sure. It was a little bit.
I can only imagine. Oh, so we wear our vaginas out.
Yeah.
Here in this town.
Exactly. Oh, my see. Mother was really afraid that that was what was going to happen. I apparently was going to become either a porn star or a prostitute on Sunset Boulevard. And
yeah. Well, I mean, that's what happened to Pretty Woman, but it all turned out great in the end for her.
Exactly.
Not so much with your story, unfortunately.
You know. As I'll tell you, I was like, I had a lot of incentive to prove my mother wrong.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, for sure.
So, yeah. So there's a lot of stuff that doesn't make it in the book. Because you know, trying to keep it to 70,000 to 80,000 words. So when I first
and trying not to get sued,
yeah, and trying not to get sued, that's always helpful.
True.
You got to be careful what you say about Disney.
Yeah,
yeah,
it worked for them. But it was when I first moved out there. I had no job, you know, no money, nothing. I just was like, hey, went to a temp agency, and my first. Job working for this temp agency was wild. I didn't know any of the programs that you were supposed to know. So they were like, well, we can hire you to answer phones here. And I was like, all right, I'll do that.
Sure.
And so, I mean, there were some real interesting things. You got people that would come in for temp jobs that would have their resumes written on crayon, and things like that. And you're like, okay. Disney wound up, or Hollywood wound up being a good lesson in not what you know, who you know.
Sure.
You know, it really,
absolutely.
It really became one of those kinds of situations where the only reason I got in where I got in was I wound up temping in the vice president and president's office over at Disneyland International. And the Hollywood thing when you're a temp is you just grab a book and you go and you sit at a desk and you read for, you know, however many hours,
right.
And you pick up your paycheck and whatever. You're just there to man the phones or whatever. I didn't ever do that. I, you know, Midwestern work ethic, I don't know what it was exactly, but
yeah.
I would show up and be like, okay, what am I supposed to do, you know, for this job? And they were kind of like,
Why are you working?
Yeah. They were like, where's your
we
book?
Just need a warm body, lady.
Yeah. They're like, where's your book? So the vice president kind of was like, well, I've got this expense account. Yeah. So yeah, I did any Disney Interactive for a while. Again, kind of weird and wild, you know, some of the people you meet, doing stuff like that. Like,
so your book really, so there's a few things that I loved about the book. First was that it centers, there's this thread of fairy tales that's kind of going through it in your artwork. And I thought that was really fascinating how you brought it back to not just fairy tales, not like the fairy tales we know,
right,
but the disturbing original fairy tales. Yes. That I was like, okay, now I got to go back and reread all of these.
So my job at Disney Animation was to read stuff, you know, it was to read a lot of fairy tales, scripts, books, whatever, folklore, all of the mythologies, all that kind of stuff. You know, it's, you could sit there. I remember when I first started, I was always like, oh, you know, I was a huge Greek mythology person. So Hercules comes out and I'm like, this is not the story of Hercules.
Yeah.
What are you guys doing? This is ridiculous. How dare you? And somebody kind of looked at me and they're like, well, do you really think that we ought to be telling the story of how he goes mad and kills his children and then, you know, put that on screen? And I'm like, oh, good point.
Yeah, no,
right.
You can't tell the original story.
Yeah, I was like, right. Oh, that's not really. So I had to do a little bit of shift in thinking where I was like, oh, the point isn't to tell like the story as it was originally told. The point of the story was to make it palatable to little children.
But yeah. I loved how you talked about that's what we do to the Bible so often,
yes.
That these original stories that are Noah's mythical.
Ark, nice little rainbow.
So pretty. Yeah. All the little animals.
Oh, and by the way, mass genocide.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, most of the cute little bunnies and squirrels drown.
Yeah.
Unless we brought them aboard for the lions to eat, you know.
Well, I mean, what happened to the unicorns?
Right. That's right.
The lions ate them.
Bye-bye, exactly. Thumper.
Yeah. Yep. Bye-bye. Yeah, no.
But the real life stories are so much more disturbing, which is what really you talk about your own life story, and that it did not turn out to be the fairy tale. You did not marry the Prince Charming.
It was not the Disney-fied version where everything works out in the end. No.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about that story?
This
crazy...
Yeah,
nightmare of a story. Right. Yes,
and to be honest, as nightmarish, you know, my caveat here is, as nightmarish as my story was, when I start hearing some other people's stories too, it's just like I'm like, oh my, I had it good.
Sure,
you know, in comparison,
but it was a nightmare to you.
It was a nightmare to me. Yeah. I was I had never really been introduced to that level of psychopathy,
right.
You know, sociopathy. It was just completely outside my realm. And I fully admit I lived a privileged life. You know, I lived a very, very privileged life. And so I didn't ever spend a lot of time seeing some of the darker sides of humanity, so to speak. I was fairly sheltered in that regard. Even living in Hollywood and whatever, yeah, you saw stuff, but, and believe me, I saw a lot of stuff, but it was never stuff that was a part of, you know, my everyday life kind of.
Right. Not an intimate
no.
partner.
Yeah.
Right.
And not that I didn't have, manipulative types of relationships prior to that. They all were. Mm-hmm. I start seeing those patterns looking back. I'm like, oh, wow. Yeah, that was probably... not the best person to be involved with. But
pathological narcissism is a whole different.
It is. And
yes.
I had no idea what I was getting into. Just, none. Sure. Because, and that was the thing I think that was. So
most people
hard.
Don't go yippity skipping
right.
into narcissistic right. relationships.
What was so funny is the people, like I had one friend who used to always be like, you were so smart. How did you get into this? And I'm like, your intelligence doesn't matter when it comes to this. It just,
it doesn't.
Right.
I say this all the time that if you, like when you think about narcissism, being in a relationship with a narcissist is really like getting into a cult.
Yes.
And you don't know that it's happening. It's this slow drip of manipulation that you don't often see. Some people around you can see it and they're like, girl, run. Right. But you're like, it doesn't.
It was
it's crazy.
It feels
making.
Good. I feel loved.
Exactly. It was the love bombing.
I feel accepted.
Love bombing. Yeah.
And like I said, being a female pastor was not the easiest. You know, being an introverted female pastor was not the easiest thing in the world in terms of dating. Because it's not like I had problems before. I've just for kicks and giggles, I had to add the added element of and you're a pastor. And so,
So
I was pretty.
You
much...
mean a lot of people don't find women pastors real sexy, and they're like, "I want what you got under that robe."
That's right.
Oh. Although I will say there are those that have the fetishes.
They have the kink. Oh, that's right.
They have the kink, and it's really bizarre and weird. And I'm like, okay, bye.
You mentioned that, in the book of like, hey, this would be a fun role play.
Yeah, gross. Yeah. I had one guy who he thought it'd be really cool to set up some kind of like an OnlyFans page of the the lady pastor or whatever. And I was
what?
Like,
oh my god.
You make a lot of money.
Until you try it.
I know. Make a lot of money.
I was like, nope, bye-bye, swipe left.
Come to confession, boys.
Oh, I'll make you clean again.
White as snow.
So how do you, you know, how do you date? And so I had turned to online dating. I'd been doing that actually for a while with marginal success. I mean, I had gone out and I actually had a couple of boyfriends that I dated for, a few months here and there. It was that moment where, you know, there was somebody who was, he was asking me questions and it wasn't sexual. It was, you know, very much at that point in time, just questions about what I do, what I believe. We would actually get into kind of, you know, some, he was non-denominational. So we had a little, you know, difference of opinion on some things. And so it was, he tapped into what I was attracted to, which was the intellect part of it.
Sure.
You know, it was, oh, I can have a conversation with this person. It's not just, you know, all about.
Same.
Yeah.
Same for me.
Yeah.
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 So, I mean, that was my immediate draw, was he tapped in immediately to what I found attractive in someone was the intellect part of it and having those discussions. He would go out of his way to go do things I liked to do.
Yeah.
And I hadn't had that happen in like forever. Mm. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Someone like actually cares what I want and what I think. So you get sucked into this thinking,
yes,
they actually care about you and they're paying attention and they're paying attention because they like you. Yeah. Little did
I
know.
It's just a very good game.
It is.
Yeah.
Yes. And so on the one hand, I was the perfect target. And on the other hand, I was very different from most other targets because they do go for the empathy. But a lot of times, at least in his case, you know, he had always dated people that he could, he could bring some kind of doubt upon their character. If they accused him of something, he would be able to bring something up that, you know, you could say, well, you don't believe this person really? Because this is what they do. One of his ex-girlfriends, I think, was a stripper or something. And you know, and so it was, you know, whatever. See, and this is always a big problem. I'm always like, no judgment. I'm like, no, I need to be more judgy. I gotta learn to be more judgy.
Character when you're issues.
I gotta learn to be more judgy. It was a situation where he needed me. He needed me financially. He came off as, you know, he's like, I just quit my job because technically I'm retired or whatever. I'm going to spend some time at home doing some, you know, stuff with my house, blah, blah, blah. Little did I know that the house was like, in foreclosure. So he'd been fighting with a mortgage company for some time over this. And before we ever met, he had gotten himself into some trouble with the feds because he made some death threats.
Oh shit.
You can't.
Yeah. Death threats to HUD officials, which, you know, you're like,
God.
You say federal not a employee. Good idea. It's like technically they're a federal employee. So it was a federal felony. It was, and I mean, it was creepy type stuff. Like he, the way he threatened them was to send them an email with their home address in it saying, one day you will find me sitting in your home with your wife and children.
Oh my God.
Okay. Yes. These are not psychopath. Just vague threats.
Crap.
Yeah.
Now, was that happening before you were married to him? Or
yes, that was like 5 years before we met.
Now, did he still do it when you were married? Because you were married, and then they were coming after him.
Oh,
right.
Well, when we got married, so we got married in October, but apparently he went like in September, and in September had made a plea deal with these charges because he didn't really want me finding out everything. So he made a plea deal.
So you didn't even know that he was involved in any legal matters?
No, not at the time. Prior to getting married. The time. I did know that there had been some issues with his mortgage company and he had gotten into some trouble, but he downplayed what it was.
Sure, he spun it his way. Sure.
It was a misdemeanor. It was something from 5 years ago, you know, yeah. Whatever. I had no idea that this whole, you know, really what yeah. he had done where this, you know, all was.
The feds are after
the
you.
The feds are after me, kind of.
Little right. different than yeah. the speeding ticket or whatever.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
He was trying to spin it as.
So okay. he did the plea deal basically to keep from having this go to trial. And they pled him down to a misdemeanor. So technically it was a misdemeanor.
Okay.
It started wow. out as a felony, but they pled him down to a misdemeanor, which sure. is really weird in federal court.
Yeah.
I discovered through all this process that a federal yeah, misdemeanor you don't go from... is bizarre. They're like, that never happens. They're like, nobody gets a federal misdemeanor. What is this? Like when we talk to attorneys, right. we'd be like,
he was just that good, that charming, yeah. Yeah. and could work,
yep.
work it out.
Yep. So I was on the one hand, I knew there was kind of something, but it didn't seem like it was a big deal. And yeah. then there was the reality of what actually was going on, and that he was doing 5 years of probation, and that he was supposed to be monitored, like his computer was
the ankle.
To, yeah. Well, the ankle monitor came in later. He
was, right.
Originally,
sorry.
Supposed to be computer monitoring because everything he did, his threats were either email.
Okay.
Or whatever. So they wanted to okay. monitor his email. So of course he was always going out and finding computers that they couldn't monitor. But
oh, good Lord.
He was not filling out the paperwork and he wasn't doing what he was supposed to be doing for this computer monitoring. And so apparently he was in violation of his probation after we got married. And I knew nothing about that.
Wow.
You know, goodness. I'm like,
yeah,
don't know anything about it.
Rebecca, you were such a perfect target.
Yeah.
Because your position as a pastor elevated him to, yes. I must, you know, people will see me as blameless because I'm the husband of a pastor.
He would use my title so often.
I bet he would.
It would.
You were yeah. the money.
When he would
cha-ching.
Start screaming into the phone at somebody or whatever, he would be like, my wife's a pastor, you know, and it was like.
Yeah, uh-huh. exactly. Yep.
I was like, don't drive yep. me into this.
like, yeah.
Yeah. That is so true, Kristen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It did, well, and it did.
Yeah,
it,
because it's with narcissists, him. It's only. They're only interested in what benefits them directly.
Yeah.
So you were just a device,
a means
that would benefit him to elevate him in some way.
Right.
So
yeah, that's yeah. exactly what it was. I was a shield. Number yeah. one, I had mm-hmm. my own house. I had my own money. And
oh yeah.
Given he was, you know, I thought he was like really willing to move to where I was living. We lived 3 hours apart when we first started dating.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And he was really willing to move there really fast.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The faster, yeah. the better, because then you yes. don't find out anything. Yes. Mm-hmm. My ex was also a narcissist. Yes. Fast. As fast as we could get
yes.
this done.
Well, oh, we met and married in 5 months.
Yeah.
Can so did we.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Those narcissists.
We were engaged.
I'm sure it took Rebecca
we
a little.
We were
yeah,
engaged.
I was going to say.
Yeah, we were.
You were engaged
a little longer because you didn't live near each other. Yeah.
Right there. Yeah, there were some technical difficulties in terms of
sure.
So and also, you know, being a pastor, you don't live with your boyfriend. You know, that's
right.
That's
right.
How would you do? So
right.
there were some. He wanted to move a car, but you know, he wanted to move and. There really aren't a lot of places there to just rent. It's not, mm-hmm. it's not a good place to just rent an apartment. And right. so it was like, And of course, when he was like, yeah, I'm going to move there, I was sort of like, oh, okay. I guess you weren't even engaged at that point. I guess we're serious. Yeah, we weren't engaged.
Oh, Lord.
Do that.
Okay.
Which is why we got engaged, because it was like, yeah, well, you're going to, yeah. And I was like, well, if your plan is you're going to come here and basically for me to live, you know, I was like, well, and we were 38 years old at the time, which you would.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tick, tick, tick.
Yeah.
The clock is ticking.
Yep. That was kind of that whole chapter of my, you know, that is the ticking clock is a big thing, you know, tick, 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 there it goes. And I wanted kids.
Yeah.
He wanted more kids. He had a daughter. And
oh, that poor sweet thing.
Oh,
I mean, it sounds like that was complicated.
It was complicated. I failed her, but at the same time, pretty much anyone who knows the situation is like, there was nothing you could have done.
I
came in way too late.
And
that's tough.
It was.
No, I just meant her poor sweet thing, child being born
into that
to him.
To a nurse. Yeah.
Yeah. Because
the mother wasn't.
You don't come away unscathed.
Yeah, yeah. The mother wasn't really much better, and I actually never met the mother, to be honest. I never met her mom. If she didn't show up for graduation, nothing.
Ugh.
Nice.
Yeah. So I mean,
so he moves to your small town.
Yeah. So he moves to my small town, and it's of course, well then, okay, we need to get married. Yeah.
I mean, if we want to have sex, we have to get married.
Exactly.
So we got to do this fast.
This is what's going to happen. We got to get married, because that's how this is going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got engaged, and he moved his daughter in with me while he was living elsewhere.
Crazy.
And that about did it. But
yeah,
again, master manipulator. Every time
this
I got
work out.
Every
That'd
time I
great.
Got cold feet and would be like, you know what, I don't think I can do this. He was
I mean, and not just cold feet, it was probably just good intuition of like, I don't think this is right. It doesn't feel right. I don't have
but
peace
that's
about
what
this.
Narcissists
and,
do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
narcissist.
So I knew
they
it was
can
wrong.
Convince you to ignore your intuition.
Yeah,
absolutely. Because that's what coercive control is all about.
Yeah. Yes. I knew it was not going to be a good situation. I knew it was not going to be, you know, this was not going to work out. What I kept telling myself, and of course, at this point, I think the problem is the daughter. I don't think he's the problem.
Well, he's probably spun it that
way,
right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
No, yeah.
The dissociative
he's not the
disorder.
Problem.
She's the one with, you know, this. And she didn't help her cause. I mean, we'll just put it that way.
She was a teenager.
She was a little over-the-top teenager. I'm just going to – there's teenager.
Yeah.
Because I worked with youth, you know. I worked with – and she was, she was kind of another level. But given, you know, sort of the hindsight, given
traumatized and
what she went through, I get it now.
Yeah.
I'm like, I totally understand why she was the way she was. And quite frankly, I mean, I'm not going to say too much, you know, about her, because it's her story and whatever. But she has done phenomenal work on herself.
Good.
Since
that's wonderful to hear.
In spite of me, you know, and it did break my heart when she reached out at one point and was like, why didn't you take me with you? And I was like,
I
was like,
yeah,
because that never entered my mind. Number one,
and I couldn't have, honey.
Yeah. I was like, number one, you weren't my kid.
Yeah.
Right.
And number two, you didn't ever even express any desire to like be with me instead of your dad. That never entered the conversation. That never was something that I would have in a million years thought she would have even wanted to have happen. So it was that shocked me.
Yeah.
But anyway, point being, So yeah, no, I get, we get into this situation, we get married, and I mean, I had like a panic attack the day before my wedding with my maid of honor, matron of honor. We were at breakfast, mm-hmm. and I was just like, okay, I've got really cold feet. I was like, I was like,
can't do this. Yeah.
I'm like, I'm really nervous about this. I don't think even then I was putting together that part of my anxiety was him in general. It was the situation. And I just kind of kept thinking, well, she's 17, she'll be 18, and then she's going to go to college, and I can get through it.
Right.
I can do anything for a year or two. You know, you tell yourself those
right, kind of right. things. And I think about how this, sits in our spirit about all of these lies, all this dark stuff that was going on behind the scenes that I think we pick up intuitively, right? Yeah. And it's just like, there's something, I can't put my finger on it, but something feels off.
Right.
And, for you to, once you were married, for it to all come out.
Yeah. Well, and the first time I really witnessed the narcissistic rage, and this was the interesting part about when we were married, because he needed me, it was rarely directed at me.
Right.
He manipulated me, but he didn't usually make me the target of his rage.
Yep. Mine, my ex didn't either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was always.
Oh boy. I was about the only target.
Yeah.
Me and the kids.
Yeah.
were the
well, my
target.
Children. Yeah. My children were, but not me. Cause he needed me.
Well, and
me.
His daughter was. His daughter was definitely a target for his rage. And the first time I witnessed it, he was on the phone with, I don't know, it was a credit card company or something. I don't know what it was anymore. A constant screaming, into the phone, word salad being thrown at them just so quickly, rapidly, loudly, abusively. And I walked in and just my eyes got like this. And I was just like, what is going on?
Right. This is a different person.
Right.
Like who has just come out, right? If you think about like a serial killer, I'm a big into, true crime and serial killers and stuff, but they talk about something comes over them.
Yeah.
That they can't control. And
that is absolutely it. And I always say that it was always and his eyes would change color.
Yes, they do.
Isn't
they
crazy?
Get dark.
Creepiest thing. They get darker. I mean, literally,
they get black.
He had kind of hazelish eyes, but when he was in that mode, they were almost black. I mean, it would just.
If you haven't seen it, people are like, that doesn't happen.
It happens.
Yes.
Right. They portray it in TV and movies, but you kind of think, oh, that's just for dramatic effect.
Yeah.
No, that honestly happens.
Yeah.
It does. Yeah.
So you're thinking, Jekyll and Hyde, what the hell have I just witnessed? Who is this person?
And then what's really scared me about it was, so most of us, when we're that worked up, we rage for a little while when we're done. You know, it's like, ding, ding, those people, that are, you know, like whatever. And you're still in a bad mood and you're like, look, I'm not mad at you, honey, but.
Yeah, your adrenaline's up and you're just. Yeah.
He hung that phone up and it was just like, hi, honey, how are you?
Oh, that's so
the collectives.
I know.
Psychopath right there, because there's no real emotion behind it. It's all manipulation. Oh,
my God. Over, kissed me, and said, hi, honey. How are you?
And how are you?
I was like, what the hell was that?
Yes.
Jeez.
I was like, what was that? Because
that's so scary.
That's not normal.
Yeah.
No.
I think the part that was so hard was how I wound up normalizing it, where it's just kind of like, yeah, that's just what he does.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes.
And
to the point where you're like, oh, that's just my everyday. And then you don't realize until you're finally out of it and away from it, you're like, oh shit.
Yeah.
I was seriously abused. that just became a part of my life.
Right.
So I was so happy to see that you had compared it to Alice in Wonderland, because
yes,
there's this book called The Borderline Mother or something like that, where, you know, women who have borderline personality disorder, it's very close to narcissism, and some of it is very narcissistic. Yeah. And
they all overlap.
Throughout that book, they describe it as Alice in Wonderland, where you're in this world that it's normal to all, like everybody in the world, but you're like, what is happening?
And then suddenly
it kind of feels normal after a while, you know, but you're like,
well,
you begin to expect the unexpected.
Yes, exactly.
So can I read an excerpt from your book, or is that not allowed because it's not published
yet? No, go for it. Please do. Yeah.
Okay. So speaking of Alice in Wonderland, I had highlighted this. You said it's not an accident that several of my paintings deal with this topic of abuse and control, utilize Alice in Wonderland imagery.
Yeah.
Feminist scholars throughout the years have seen Alice as a complex female character who is both strong and assertive and underground image of a woman wrestling resisting the system, and yet is also subject to the male powers that surround her.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I had done some reading on some feminist scholarship on Alice in Wonderland, and I found it fascinating. I was like, oh, wow.
Yeah. It is fascinating.
And, you know, and like one of them, I think, had pointed out, and I don't have it in front of me, so I can't tell you who the author was off the top of my head, but I quoted in the book and I footnote it. But essentially it's that, the, you know, when Alice goes in and it's, she's given two choices, eat me, drink me.
Right.
Okay. Well, which does what?
What do they do?
What does he do?
Right.
You know, it's like, it's what is, so she doesn't have all the information she needs to make a good decision, but she's got to make a decision. It's like,
I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah. It's,
well,
yeah.
I'm not able to make an informed decision. We're so often not able to make an informed decision. You were trying to make an informed decision, but you didn't have all of the information. This guy had just done a plea deal. So like, you're trying to make an informed decision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You
have to eat this or drink this. What's it going to be? What's it going to be? What's it going to be? You know,
and so often then in the church, if you have married this person, now you are stuck because divorce is not an option. That's not on the table anymore. So now you're like, well, what am I supposed to do about this situation?
Right.
So.
Just be tortured unto death, essentially.
Yeah.
Tortured unto death.
Yeah.
So how long were you married to him?
I was only, well, okay. So I was married to him for 2.5 years before I filed for divorce. It took me another 2 years to get divorced.
Sure.
Because.
As it does.
And we didn't even have kids together. I'm like, it's just how he drug things out. He went through a couple of different attorneys because that's what he did.
Yep.
All that kind of stuff.
He will switch and switch and motion after motion after motion.
And the attorney switched on him too.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know.
Right.
I'd say the final straw is he went to federal prison, except for the fact that they actually weren't going to send him. That for my sake, they were willing to keep him like in a federal holding facility because they don't actually have federal prisons in Nebraska. So they make like deals with county jails or whatever to hold them and blah, blah, blah. And they were going to do that. They were going to keep him like,
How nice.
You know, Wahoo.
You're like, no, go ahead.
I can visit him.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know,
which is kind
of one of those situations where I'm sitting there going, how privileged and how, you know, that.
Right.
You know, that's crazy. You know, why am I getting special treatment?
Why is he getting special treatment?
Well,
I mean, that he doesn't have to.
Because of me, which was wild.
Yeah,
I couldn't.
Send his ass away.
They were doing all this stuff. And quite frankly, I think they didn't send him away before out of deference to me. Because when I first, the first time I walked into a courtroom when he'd been arrested. I mean, like everybody was, the court officials were treating me with kid gloves. Like the U.S. Marshals were all empathetic and like, we're so, and I'm like, I mean, I appreciated it, but I know most women don't get that treatment. That is not the treatment that they get.
No, you carried the wrath of God on your
shoulders. I guess I did.
It's probably how they viewed you.
So, I mean, I fully admit that played into my favor big time.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I try to recognize that's not going to be every woman's experience when she's right. in a courtroom.
I thought you recognized that well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I heard that because that is true.
You know, like I said, I got so pulled into his wonderland, you know, into this weird reality where everything got so normalized. I felt he was the victim. I really did. I thought at some point, you know, I have not seen all the stuff. I mean, he was very careful and curated everything that I saw. Paperwork, all of that kind of stuff, was very careful. I just was not able to recognize that he was creating his own fantasy land.
Yeah, he does, as they do. Yeah.
And part of it was also when I was talking, you know, with like my mom or something, when I would talk about the narcissistic rage, because they never saw that. No one else, you know, would see
no,
that.
No. They keep that for you.
And not that my parents cared for him. They really didn't. But when I would talk about it, I'd be like, well, you don't know how he talks to, you know, like customer service people. This is insane. Mm-mm. And my mom would be like, well, you know, sometimes, you know, they can be infuriating. And you know, sometimes they deserve to be like that. And I was like, okay.
Right.
You know, I know,
so many people that cared for me. And, you know, I try to explain to them what was going on behind closed doors in my home. And they'd be like, well, sometimes my husband will blah, blah, blah. Or, you know, I tell my mom and she's like, you know, your dad and I had such a hard time the early years of our marriage. And it gets better.
Right.
It gets better. You just got to stick with it.
Right.
Oh, my God.
Very forceful.
But the problem is that, like, in my story, I hadn't ever even remotely mentioned it for 13, 14 years, right? I had lived in this in silence, except for maybe a therapist or two we had gone to. But I never talked to anybody about it except my sister. So then when I start talking about it, they're like, what are you talking about? You have the perfect marriage. Like, what? But he was a pastor and I was a pastor's wife. Ooh. We cannot talk about it. You can't talk about it to anybody.
No.
So.
Meanwhile, I'm telling everybody and nobody's believing me.
Right.
Nobody's believing me because they know him.
Well,
or they think they know him. He's such a nice man.
Right. He's such a good husband and father.
He's,
and
he's a good provider. And he's friendly with the neighbors. And
exactly.
Surely it's not as bad as you're making it out to
now,
be.
Now, I'm
playing the
bad.
Victim.
Yeah. I have to say. My parents, you know, I would call them up, you know, the first time he got arrested, and as far as my parents were concerned, it was like, why are you staying with him? They were like, what is the deal? Why are you staying with him?
Well, I'm glad they changed their tune. Yeah.
And they were just kind of like, I called my mom up one time about something that I was really upset about, and she got real quiet, and she just finally went, you know what? I got to get off the phone. And I was like, okay. She goes, because you don't want to hear what I want to tell you. I was like, you don't want to hear it. Because what you wanted to tell me was get divorced. Get out.
And run.
I think she knew I wasn't quite ready to hear it, but I knew that's what she wanted to tell me. And I said to her was, I said, I know what you want to, I said, I know what you want to say. And I said, and I understand. And I had people around me who were truth tellers, you know, that would not hold back and that told me and would be like, you know, we're really concerned about this. And so I was very grateful to have those people in my life. And I didn't ever get mad at them. Because a lot of times what happens, you know, when you tell a friend the truth like that, they'll turn on you and be like, oh, you know, they're like, well, I'm going to choose my husband over you. And, you know, I'm not going to, you know. And I didn't do that. I knew where it was coming from. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's because I'm a pastor and, you know, having those hard conversations. But I was like, no, I get it. I know why you're saying
it. I get it. Yeah.
And So my other word of advice is, if you can sit there and say, you know, I'd be telling myself the same thing in that position, maybe you ought to listen to yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What
I tell people today, and what I try to do for myself, because I had learned for so many years, I was with my abuser for almost 15 years, to suppress my instincts, to completely suppress and ignore all of my gut instincts, is now when I am feeling anxious or something doesn't feel right, I try to remove my head and my heart from the situation and just concentrate. What is my gut telling me? Because I can't trust my head. It's going to try to logic and override what I'm feeling. I can't trust my heart because I'm like, but I'm in love. Or, you know, I want good for these people. I'm empathetic.
Yeah. Well, I have a whole chapter on how
you've got to give grace. Yes. So now I'm just like, what does my gut say? Because my gut is never wrong. Turns out my gut is never wrong. I just had to learn. It's taken almost 10 years now, post-divorce, for me to finally figure out how to disengage my head and my heart. And focus on
tune into
what
your
my
body.
Gut is saying, and follow
if
that.
If you have a trick for that, let me know. Because
mindfulness.
Yes, mindfulness practices. We do. Yes. Yeah. Good therapy.
I have done some of that in the past. I'm not as good as it right
now.
As
some therapy good body work. And mindfulness.
Absolutely. Oh, and I'd have to give a shout out to my therapist at the time.
Good.
She was phenomenal. She was
good. Good. Good.
Because
love it.
Well, because as a pastor, getting divorced, I had my own theological issues to work through. That you know, with it wasn't just the emotion of it. It was also the theology behind it. Of like, can I do this? Is this okay? And as much as I would have told abuse victims, yes, it's fine. It was different for me. It was different for myself.
That's a hard one.
Yeah,
it's a hard one.
She was phenomenal in working through that because she had a very, very in touch spiritual kind of sense. I mean, she wasn't like a quote Christian counselor kind of thing. But she definitely had a spiritual side to what she did. And she was actually a member at a colleague of mine's church, and he was who recommended her. He's like, she's really good. And I was like, cool. Okay. Now I appreciated that, like, because originally we went as marriage counseling because things were spiraling. Things were spiraling. And I was like,
oh, the marriage counseling.
To marriage
counseling. We tried that so many times.
And he did not want to go until I threatened. I just basically said, well, then fine. If she tells me to get divorced, I'm getting divorced. And he was like, oh, well.
Well, then I should probably go because she's going to think I'm so charming and I'll be able
It was more, he was like, well, then she's a crappy therapist if she tells you to get divorced. And I was like, well, then maybe you ought to come find out and go to the therapy, go to the counseling.
Man.
And she was like, so your wife's a pastor and you're doing all this stuff that is really reflecting badly on her. She's a public figure. Don't you care what is happening to her?
You mean a little empathy?
Yeah. And his response was, well, they're Christian. They have to forgive.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Of course. Of course. Rebecca, plug your book again for us. Title. Yes. Publisher, when it's going to be released, where we can buy it.
It is called Once Upon a Nightmare Through the Looking Glass of Narcissistic Abuse by Choir Publishing. And it is going to be released May 28th and will be available on Amazon.
Well, I have already recommended this to so many people. I mean, just first of all, that you are a female pastor is so refreshing. And that you have these experiences. I think one of the most amazing things to me was your story of how the church supported you instead of shunned you, because that was my experience.
Right.
And that you had the community coming around you and saying, we will support you. We love you. How can we help you get through this? Instead of, well, you know, you made your bed, sleep in it, shunning, which right. happens so often in the community. I thought was really a beautiful example of how it's supposed to work.
Right.
Well, Rebecca, this has been lovely. We don't want to keep you forever, but I mean, we could do this for hours, but God, well,
I would love if you
amazing.
Ever want me to come back on. I got lots of things to talk about. No.
Yeah, I bet you do. Yeah.
Oh, so no, great. So
happy to be a guest again sometime if you ever want
thank
that.
Thank you. So. Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us
today.
Thank
you for having me on. It's been fun. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Has been. You're very welcome. Okay, so now we are going to be taking a break. That was the end of season two, and we're going to be taking a little...
This is our wrap-up episode for season two, isn't it?
It is, yes.
But we have got some exciting things in the books, you and I. We've got some exciting plans, and we are going to be working mightily on season three in this off time.
Yes,
so.
We're going to have more guests. We already have some guests lined up. We have some visits to some places.
Yeah, some on-site visits.
Ooh, girl, yes. It's going to be fun.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. Looking forward to it.
It's been a wonderful season with you, my friend.
Always.
Yes.
Always. Love you.
Yes. Love you, too.
And I love all you out there who actually listen to us. Thank you so much. And you know, share us, like us, share us, subscribe. Please, please, please. That's my begging.
I like when you beg.
That's what he said.
Oh, God.
And
okay,
on
girl.
That note. Farewell until next season.
Bye.
Bye.
You have reached the end of another episode of Christian Sanity. And just like voicemail, you guys know what to do after the beep. Like, subscribe, and share us with a friend. Hey, or an enemy, we're not picky. Make sure you check out this week's notes for links to content information. And if you have a story or would like to be a guest on our podcast, hit us up. Again, thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time.